Welcome back to the National Cancer Prevention Workshop, produced by Less Cancer. This year, we're talking about cancer prevention in rural America, screenings, and healthcare for better outcomes. My name is Miles O'Brien. I'm on the board of Less Cancer, and we are joined by someone who is an absolute healthcare warrior out there in the trenches, trying to do what she can to move the needle for people who have lots of risk and not a lot of access to healthcare in this country. She is the director of the Free Clinic of Culpeper, and she has her hands full. So we really appreciate her time. Tammy LaGraff, thank you for breaking away from your busy scene there in Culpeper. As a matter of fact, we can hear some of the activity in the background. Just give us a slice of life there. What's going on a daily basis in your free clinic these days?
Hi, Miles. Thank you for inviting me to join this today. Well, we are seeing patients here today all day long from 9 to 3, and so there's a lot of action, and there's a lot of people coming in to apply to be patients, and sometimes people come in just to ask questions, and so it's busy.
Yeah, give us an idea. How many people come through the doors there, and how do you manage the flow, so to speak?
Well, we have probably, it's hard to count, but I would say between 30, 40 people come through here a day at least. And that's counting people who have appointments and people who are coming to reschedule and people asking questions. And we have an incredible staff, both at our front desk and also a community health worker who greets people and helps answer questions and direct them as well. So there's a lot of activity in that very small lobby.
Well, so tell me, a free clinic, I think the name, you know, sort of speaks volumes about what you're all about. But do you offer care to anybody who walks across your door?
So we have four criteria to become a patient here. And the first is that you have to be a Culpeper resident. You have to be 18 or older. You have to have no health insurance. And then you meet some pretty strict income guidelines. And currently that is that people show us their pay stubs that prove that they are at 300% of the federal poverty limits or lower.
Okay, and historically, is there a type of case that is typical, or is it all over the map?
Currently, what we see are there are 90% of our patients, and last year we saw 600 patients here at the clinic, unduplicated patients, and currently we're at 90% of our patients who are Spanish-speaking, and mostly from Central America, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras. And so most of our patients speak Spanish as their primary language. Some know a little bit of English. Some speak a dialect that even our bilingual staff cannot understand. So typically that's what we're seeing here right now.
So right off the bat, you have a communication problem. I mean, Spanish is one thing. I assume you can find healthcare providers, probably yourself included, who can get through Spanish. But when it comes to some of these indigenous languages that you'd find in Guatemala and Honduras, those are quite challenging to say the least, right?
Yes, absolutely. So as you can imagine, most of our patients are dealing with a lot of health literacy issues. They do not know our healthcare system. They do not know how it works. They don't really understand how to manage chronic illnesses. So we do a tremendous amount of teaching. When we come upon more and more people who are lately showing up who are unable to speak Spanish, that really sets us back. And now what we've observed is not only are they not able to speak Spanish, they are unable to read or write in any language, and they don't recognize or understand numbers or letters. So the communication issues are big, and as you can imagine, it's very difficult to teach someone about their medications or how much to take or what time is their appointment or any number of instructions that we take for granted with most teaching.
That is it's a very steep hill to climb there, and there's so many issues to unpack here. But just finding a translator who's able to go from English or even through Spanish, if you have to some of these indigenous languages it's very difficult to find these people, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So we are lucky in that we have quite a few bilingual staff. But for these indigenous languages, we use an iPad translation service that we call into. But we have to schedule those ahead of time. We can't just dial it up and get someone who speaks Quechua or one of those.
And I imagine if you've got an individual who has no knowledge of English, or for that matter, what knows even what a number looks like, it's not like they're making appointments with you. So they're walking in off the street, and here you have this language problem, and you have really no way to deal with it. Just walk me through how you muddle through on a day-to-day basis.
So we will do our best as to explaining and, trying to use any forms of communication you can imagine to try and make that point. Occasionally we get lucky and they have either a older child or a relative who comes with them who speaks both the indigenous and Spanish. So then we have to speak Spanish and they translate it to the indigenous language. So it usually involves a few steps to communicate.
Well, oftentimes it is the child who ends up in the school that becomes the translator for the family. Well, yes. Let's talk about some of the issues that they present with. First of all, are they eating well? That's number one.
So typically we do not see that they're eating well. I think that in most of the countries that they're from, they are very used to fresh fruits and vegetables. And so coming here, what they're finding is that they can't afford that. So they will buy foods that are canned or frozen meals, things like that. And so we see a lot of high blood pressure, we see a lot of high cholesterol, and of course diabetes. Pretty typical with any doctor's office, but the piece to the puzzle that is missing again is that communication and being able to explain and teach and then get them access to healthier foods. That's also a challenge.
Big challenges there. So you're seeing a relatively young population here. These are, after all, agricultural workers who have migrated for work. So I suspect you probably don't see a ton of cancer. What you're seeing are all the precursors, the causes of cancer later in life, right?
Yes. So, trying to stay ahead of all those things, with all the things that we know help prevent cancer, the, healthy diet, exercise, all of those things, obviously. So we try to teach those things, but that makes it very difficult. And then the screenings that we do come upon that we try to teach them to do are also very terrifying to them. Anything from a mammogram to a colonoscopy, trying to explain and teach how that works. If anyone's ever gone through a colonoscopy and knows about that prep, it's complicated and terrifying, and to try and teach that or even a mammogram is a lot.
I can't even imagine how you get all of that across and explain that that's not going to be a bad thing when you consider what a colonoscopy is all about. Huge challenges there. Do you feel like are you making progress? Because you've been in recent months kind of surprised by this influx, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, I think that we were starting to feel a little more confused by the increased no-shows and the increased med non-compliance. And when we took a step back and realized what we were looking at, and kind of made ourselves universally aware that what we're seeing are communication issues, that we were able to kind of pivot a little bit and really say, okay, we have to go back to the basics and really start at the very basics of health literacy and finding a way to communicate, just simple things. So that's where we're at, is really just sort of I don't even know how to describe it. We sort of erased the board and started over again.
Well, yeah, communication is prevention. Education is prevention. This is right at the heart of this, when you have a population that is just coming almost with a blank slate to you. I guess potentially, if you want to be really blue sky about it, there might be some opportunities here, because you can really educate them from ground zero. I mean, is that one way to look at it?
It is. And, you know, we have really looked at it in a way that it's a challenge that we really want to overcome. We really want to figure this out, because, you know, it's so important to the health of our patients, our community, keeping them out of the hospital, helping, you know, the burden on our emergency room, all of that. So it has become kind of a mission for us, and, you know, just looking for little victories at this point.
Tell me, where does Medicaid fit into the picture here? Is that even a factor when you're talking about this population?
Very little. So our patients can sometimes get services for their children, CHIP or, you know, other insurances for their children, and occasionally food stamps, occasionally some patient first for women's health issues. But unless they meet the requirements for citizenship or Medicaid, that really doesn't come into play for a large majority of our patients. So,
what about improving their diet? That would help a lot of the things you are addressing here when it comes to cholesterol, high blood pressure, mm-hmm. obesity, obviously. But again, you know, so often these rural environments are food deserts, mm-hmm. ironically. Because they are there as part of the agricultural system. What can be done about that? What are you trying to facilitate?
So a couple of years ago, we had some landscaping that had gone totally rogue out front, and we cut it all back and got rid of it, and we're trying to decide what to do. And one of our board members said, why don't you put some growing boxes there? And so we have 4 pretty good sized growing boxes that we grow basics, tomatoes, peppers, onions, cucumbers, and herbs, which our patients love herbs, especially, you know, the ones that they use most frequently, like cilantro and parsley and things like that. And then we were able to partner with some local farmers who, when they have extras, they bring them. Piedmont's, the minority and veteran farmers of the Piedmont, they have been amazing to us. Anytime they have a surplus, they bring it almost weekly. Our patients just love the fresh fruits and vegetables. And we try to get some recipes out in Spanish and English that, you know, if there's foods that they don't usually see, like squash or things that they're not accustomed to, we try to get some kind of recipes out that shows them how to use those. So.
But again, recipes for somebody who doesn't read or write or understand what a number is, that could be a problem too.
It sure is. Yep. We try to use pictures, you name it.
Wow. I'm kind of bowled over by the complexity of the challenge that you face there. But you're not alone, are you?
No, we're not. We recently, our state association, the Virginia Association of Free and Charitable Clinics, has conferences twice a year, and so we had one a couple weeks ago. And we spend a lot of time just comparing notes, other directors, other clinic patient care coordinators, and we are finding that there are pockets within the state where this is not uncommon at all, and they're seeing very similar issues.
You know, aside from, you know, what you're doing, which is just, you know, kind of tactical in the trenches, are there some big picture solutions that you think we can address?
Well, you know, I think as we try and look at, you know, skipping all of that about communication, there are basics. There are letting them feel safe and welcome here so that they connect, so that we can stay engaged with them and they keep coming back and we can keep chipping away at it. I think that's probably the biggest picture that we try to present. And trying to make sure that we have fresh vegetables and herbs that they like, just to kind of get them to keep coming. Because the more they keep coming, the more we can chip away at all of it. So,
well, I'm sure they feel welcome there if you're running the show. Tammy LaGraff is the director of the Free Clinic of Culpeper. So you just gave us 15 valuable minutes of your day. I know you've got a busy waiting room, and we really appreciate you taking a few moments to join us for the National Cancer Prevention Workshop produced by Less Cancer. We're talking about cancer prevention in rural America, screenings and health care for better outcomes, and Tammy LaGraff is all about that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, and thanks to Less Cancer. They really do help us quite a bit here at the clinic.
And thanks for watching. I'm Miles O'Brien for Less Cancer.